So this topic is entitled Hindrances to Growth. And it's tied to the topic of spiritual discipline a lot because it does take a lot of spiritual discipline to grow. All of us want to grow, but we also know there are a host of things that can hinder growth. And sometimes the same thing hinders one guy and maybe not the next guy. But there's certain things that hinder anybody. So we're going to look at a few things that can hinder growth and some actions to take to get rid of hindrances. So here again, you know, my topic is more of a general thing that applies to all ages and stages, both for those of us who have more experience and are in more leadership roles, and for those who are up and coming and are still learning how to develop those leadership qualities. So I was given some things to talk about, and interestingly enough, the first thing to talk about as a hindrance to growth is financial stress. There's no question that financial problems have created a lot of struggles, a lot of problems, a lot of issues in people's lives, especially for married couples. You know, in a lot of our communities, it's expensive. Land is expensive. Home prices have increased. I think the average home price in America is well over $400,000. Of course, if you average in some of those billion-dollar homes, it can... But anyhow, I don't know. I would expect most of you in your communities have experienced a spike in home ownership and even renting. In our church, the majority of the young married couples live 20 to 30 minutes away from out of the community because it's affordable to buy a starter home there compared to right in Plain City, which it has its positives and negatives. We're spreading the light into other areas where we never used to show up. The negative is we're not right around each other to do as much community with each other. But it's pretty easy for a husband and wife to hit stress points in finances, you know, financial considerations. If one is a spender and the other one is frugal, that can create some tension. It can create some problems with too much month at the end of the money. And so... one of the first things to do is acknowledge the problem. Talk about it. Communication. We hear communication in so many different situations. And here again, in financial stress problems, talking about your problem is super, super important. You can't fix a problem by avoiding it. And so, you know, sometimes as you learn to talk about financial problems, and sometimes you need to get help to learn how to talk about them without just ending up butting heads and yelling or getting mad or getting silent or whatever. But as you learn to talk about finances peacefully, you can acknowledge the habits that you have that create tension. And So if your spending habits create stress, plan out ways to set boundaries. You know, maybe my wife is pretty frugal. I completely trust her to go shopping, and I am happy to let her do the grocery shopping. And she does not blow money. I'm grateful for that. But some wives do make impulse buys that create problems on your finances. And so maybe... You can talk about it, and maybe the wife, you know, maybe you can say, okay, if you are considering buying something without having planned to, that's over $100, give me a call. Let's talk about it, you know. Maybe you are working through something in your shop or your business, and you decide you need this air compressor, and it's going to cost $2,500, and you just go ahead and buy it, and then the credit card bill hits, and your wife's going through, $2,500? And we didn't talk about it. Did you really? I mean, couldn't you have bought one on Facebook Marketplace for a grand? You know, it's just, and so I think you need to do each other the favor of communicating about expenses. And often, like my wife, it blows her mind the money that goes through our fingers as farmers and greenhouse people, and how little is left at the end of the year. Like it's crazy. But even if she doesn't understand the business, talking about what I'm going to do and the money that's going to be spent helps set her mind at rest. She knows what's going to be happening. And I think that's really important. And another thing that I think can help a lot with financial stress is creating a budget. And that can be really challenging. We have two seasonal businesses. So we have a farm and we have a greenhouse. So my income can vary by $100,000 from one year to the other, depending on drought and commodity prices of organic grains. Seriously. And so how do you set a budget on that? But anyhow, I think it's really a good idea to set a budget. Now, I think it's good for you, young men, if you have spending money, if you have an allowance, start tracking. Start writing down, tracking your income and your expenses, and see where your money's going. I think it's a great habit to develop. And there's a lot of good tools to use. There's a lot of good apps to use. You know, how many of you know about Dave Ramsey? All right. Ramsey Solutions has an app called Every Dollar. I think it's a pretty good budgeting app. I do, however, want to raise a cautionary flag about embracing Ramsey whole hog. I think he has a lot of sound financial advice, but I think his push to gain wealth and his promotion of spending wealth on yourself once you've reached a certain stage goes outside of what we see Jesus calling us to. Is that a fair way of talking about it? That being said, I still think we can use every dollar wisely, but be careful about just always listening to Ramsey and that stuff and swallowing it all. You Need a Budget is another app. And good old envelopes with cash for certain categories of spending, that works really well for some people. There's nothing wrong with that. Whatever, it's the main thing, it's a way of having discipline in your finances. And it's a way of knowing what to expect. It's giving every dollar a job, and it can reduce a lot of tensions and problems that are hindrances, because financial issues are one of the big reasons for lots of divorces, and under Mennonites, for lots of stresses. Another aspect of financial stress, for some reason, a lot of Mennonites think that owning a business is the way to go. We think that, you know, that's the way to make money, to get ahead. And there are lots of positives about owning a business. It is probably one of the ways that you can more easily get ahead. You know, there's a little more option for making money and paying off your place and that kind of thing. But you know what? Owning a business is not for everybody. Some men do not do well with running a business. And some men do really well having a day job. And having a day job and being a faithful servant to an employer does not make you less of a man than the guy who has 12 employees and is driving new pickups every year. Because owning a business ties you down. Owning a business creates stress points. Owning a business puts a lot of responsibilities on you as the business owner. And there's just so much that goes into running a business. Even a small business like ours, you still have to do all the tax stuff and you still have to fill out all the paperwork. And you, it's crazy how much goes into being a business owner. And you can't go home at the end of the day and be done. There's always something I could be doing. I never run out of work. And if you're a day laborer, you can go home and you can go out in the garden with Beth and do garden, you know, even if you don't feel like it because you're 69 or whatever. But, you know, you can spend time playing with your children, taking them fishing. You can go on a walk with your wife. But being a business owner, like for me right now in the winter, I have flexibility. I can take off and go help somebody for several days. So that, you know, there's benefits in both directions. But I would say if you're a young man and you think that starting a business is the thing, I would really strongly advise you to build a business plan, a real business plan. And get a real businessman, or actually get a financial consultant to go over your business plan with you and scrutinize it and see if it's a valid business plan. And you might think you don't have $700 to pay a business consultant to help you start your business. It might cost you $7,000 later because you didn't, or $70,000. Seriously, we started the greenhouse business debt-free, and I about lost my tail. It struggled for 8 to 10 years before it started being profitable. I would have been very wise. I thought I was wise. I thought I knew how not to blow money and whatever, but I should have got financial consulting before we started. I'm just telling you how what my experience was. Money problems create relational stress. They easily result in worry, lying awake at night, wondering how you're going to get the bills paid. They can make you cranky and affect the way you relate to your children. It can move you into working crazy long hours to try to make ends meet, and then you miss church services, and then you feel guilty about that, and you barely spend personal time with the Lord, and it's just a spiral into tension. I hope that's not your experience, but that can be your experience if you make poor choices and if you prioritize wrong things. So, yeah, money problems can be a hindrance to your growth, but you can find ways of working. You can get help to resolve your issues and move forward. It's not a hopeless situation, but get help in getting out of it if you need to. So another area to talk about is physical fatigue, and that goes along with some of the stuff we were talking about. You know, men are created to work, and it was mentioned this morning. We're designed to create, to build, to solve problems, to lead, and to make things happen. And that's a good thing. But it's also easy to take that and go overboard with it. We don't know when to stop. We don't know how to limit ourselves. And so they can become hindrances. And so, you know, maybe you didn't plan that business out very well and you end up with a huge debt load, and you know, you're leaving early, you're getting home late, and you're plain tuckered out. Now, you know, Gary's tuckered out because of his age, but if that's happening to you in your 30s and 40s and 50s, it's because you're overworking. But, you know, because you got yourself in a bind and you're trying to get out of it, and that can be a problem. It can really stress you out, and it's not a good situation to be in long term. So I mentioned the things we do. So we have this greenhouse business, and May is when we're retailing full scale. It's crazy time. We're busy. And, you know, I got fertilizer to mix and pests to watch and customers to take care of. And there's always stuff to do, to fix, whatever, flowers to water. Not only that, I need to keep watching when it's dry enough to go out and plow the cover crop, power harrow it, and plant my corn. And I know about craziness. And my boys are grown and gone. My oldest son can help during the crazy times, and I'm glad for that. And it's usually manageable. My daughter can run the greenhouse for the days that I'm out in the field. But if the craziness is long term, you better do something or you're going to go crazy. If you can stay happy, if you can stay optimistic, you can probably work through a crunch time. But if your crunch times go from month to month to month to month, you're headed for a crash and you need to change something. Physical fatigue is a hindrance. And I think it's important to discipline ourselves, to find ways to make the changes necessary, delegate responsibilities, get a different job. If you need to sell your business and do something else, do it. I mean, because if you crash, what's the point of going on? But, you know, it's for some guys when they have a business and there's work that when they see more opportunity, it's like they think they have to grow. They think they have to hire more help or take the job and just work a little harder, work more hours. It's, you know what? It's okay to let somebody else take that job. You don't have to do it all just because the opportunity is there. Manage your jobs wisely enough, discipline yourself so that you have a life and you have a wife and you have children. I'm saying that because I know some mistakes that I made, and you see that. You see church leaders who are too heavily involved in business to lead well, and their brotherhood feels that. Their brotherhood feels like they don't have time for me, and that can be a problem. So another thing that goes along with physical fatigue is mental exhaustion. You know, not all jobs are very demanding physically. You might not come home at the end of the day just plumb physically bushed, but depending on what job you have, you know, you might be in customer service, you might be in sales, you might be managing employees, technical service jobs. You probably are dealing with dimwits like me on the phone trying to figure out what's wrong with their computer, you know. And you come home mentally exhausted. And that can also be a hindrance, you know. If you're always exhausted, here again, how's your time with the Lord? How well can you spend time absorbing the Word? How well can you put energy into meaningful relationships with your wife and children, church activities, that kind of thing? If I've found times when in the business, like, there's a big difference between being busy and just going for it and cranking out the next thing, but when my mind starts fogging, there's a problem. we'd better make some changes. We'd better find ways to slow down. Mental exhaustion is something to take seriously, and it can be a real hindrance. And a variety of factors can play into that. It may not just be work-related. Maybe there's a health issue going on. Maybe there's a chemical imbalance that's factoring into this. But God's desire is that we live in joy, trusting Him, and not feeling bogged down, either mentally or physically. And that brings us to the importance of rest. With both physical and mental fatigue, rest and sleep are super important. Not getting enough sleep usually results in a groggy mind in the morning, and then it's hard to have a good devotional time because you're either not focusing well or you're falling asleep while you're praying or reading. And here again, discipline is the key. You know, if you're a social guy like I am, or at least used to be, and you're away for the evening and you're the last one to leave church because you just love talking with people, you get home late and then you get to bed late and then it's hard to get up in the morning. You know, it's just kind of a snowball. So you might have to discipline yourself and decide when you get to church, okay, we're going to be leaving 15 minutes after dismissal tonight because I need rest. Or maybe, if you're a business owner, you need to be willing to knock off of work an hour earlier than you'd really like to, so you have time to go home and help your wife in the garden, or take your boys fishing, or whatever it might be. Go help your neighbor. There's lots of things that you can do to discipline yourself to make time for physical sleep and rest. How many of you have problems with insomnia, laying awake at night and can't sleep? Oh, wow, young kids too. Amazing. I never had that problem when I was young, but boy, I know about insomnia. And no slam against you, it's just interesting to me. When I started lying awake at night is those early greenhouse years when the money wasn't coming in and I didn't know how the bills were going to be paid, and I'm the responsible guy. Or when I went to bed with a disagreement with my wife and didn't take care of it, and I wake up and I'm like, okay, now how am I supposed to handle this? How should I have done this? How do I work through this? Or our church went through a time when 9 families left our brotherhood. That tore me up, and I would lay awake at night, just mental turmoil, trying to think through this and work through this. And there's all kinds of things that can affect us. And maybe you're spending too much time on your phone just before you go to bed. But they do say that screen time before bedtime is not helpful with good rest. So anyhow, if any of you have found a really good formula for getting over insomnia, please let me know afterwards. Last night I slept well. The night before that, I woke up at 4:15 in the morning with no reason to get up early, and I was done, you know. That's why I have these bags under my eyes, you know. So anyhow, preaching to myself here. But in spite of not having it figured out, I will share some tips. Get to bed early. The more you sleep before midnight, the more restful it is. When you're lying awake at night, tell God what's on your mind. Talk to Him. Spend time in prayer with Him. Ask Him as the Prince of Peace to bring you peace. Or if you're lying awake, get up and have your devotional time. That's a sweet, quiet time of the night, no disturbances, no excuses. Get up and talk to God and spend time in the Word. That's a good time to have your personal devotions. And then, if you get sleepy again, crash out until it's time to get up. Discipline yourself to think good things. Don't go to bed without clearing up any unsettled tiff with your wife or brothers and sisters or whoever. Or if you have relationship issues with someone else, prioritize doing all you can to mend that, and you may find yourself sleeping better. Melatonin and valerian root help some people sleep well because your body might not be making enough yourself. It's by itself. And if you never experience insomnia, rejoice and sleep sweetly. But insufficient sleep is a hindrance. Hopefully most of you don't have a problem with that. I'm going to talk a little bit about Facebook and other social media. How many of you think Facebook has significant benefits in your life? Okay, one guy's honest, thank you. I think it does. It helps me find good deals on Marketplace. But you know what? I was driving my wife crazy the last couple months because I need an enclosed trailer. And I didn't want to buy a new one because I don't need it very much of the year. And I spent hours scouring Marketplace for a good used enclosed trailer that fit my size and needs. And I gave up. But Facebook is a time-wasting money trap, a hole, bunny hole is what I was wanting to say. Some people can utilize it okay to stay in touch with people who they can't connect with otherwise. I have an account. I friended one person, and I should unfriend that person. Not because he's not a good guy. He's my nephew. But good grief. I mean, I am not a Facebook guy, but I have found myself scrolling. You can blow a half hour without even thinking you're on for 10 minutes. It's a serious area of needing discipline. And there's lots of negative mind food available on Facebook, as well as immodesty. Not only that, how do you feel when you're sitting in a group and having and visiting, and one in the group is there keeping up with Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok, yeah, whatever. I still know people who are on Facebook all the time. But yeah, they're older baby boomers. So let's just say it's not relationship building when you're in a group visiting and you're there scrolling social media. So we should all in our churches agree to make a rule that none of us should be on social media ever, right? Oh, why not? How about trusting each other to discipline and being transparent with our heart's desires and our usage, being willing, you know. How about you being the young man or the middle-aged man that lets your wife know, hey, this is where I've been. This is how much time I've spent. If you have an accountability group, this is where I've been. This is how much time I spent. What do you think? Are there areas I need to shut down on? Can you help me do that? I think that's a good thing because you can really mess yourself up. The people that you follow, which that might be kind of in the next, yeah, that might be in my next section, which is podcasts. You know, most of our churches don't utilize the radio, but we can listen to podcasts. And like I said, I listen to some podcasts. I like listening to regenerative agriculture podcasts, strength to strength, whatever. But how about the benefit of some silence in your head? Do you always have your earbud on? When do you have time to talk to God through the day? Are you always listening to something? I think you do well to have some silent time. And I think you do well to really think carefully about what you listen to and who you listen to. Those people are called influencers for a reason. Who do you want to have the primary influence in your life? Who do you give the most opportunity to be the primary influencer in your life? Think about that and discipline yourself accordingly. Let's talk a little bit about relationship strains. That's something else that I think is a big hindrance to growth. Scripture has plenty to say about relationships. Proverbs 13:10, by pride comes nothing but strife, but with the well-advised is wisdom. So, whenever there's strife, someone's proud. So, just be glad it's not you. I mean, that other guy. 1 Thessalonians 5:13, and be at peace among yourselves. Kind of sounds like a pretty strong suggestion, doesn't it? 1 John 4:20, if a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? Ouch, John. Isn't that a little radical? But, you know, I don't hate my brother or my wife or my fellow employee. We just don't get along. But what is the first and greatest commandment and the second one? Love. Colossians 3:13, bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. Yeah, but he hasn't said sorry yet. He's hurt me too much. 1 Peter 3, whoever would love life and see good days must keep their tongue from evil and their lips from deceitful speech. They must turn from evil and do good. They must seek peace and pursue it. How many of you enjoy hunting? All right. I used to. I'm kind of almost too lazy now. But you have to be willing to get up early in the morning, before daylight, get out, often in the cold, drive, you know, do your scent control and all of that stuff, and get up in the tree stand and wait. But you're pursuing that buck. But he didn't show up the first morning, and he didn't show up the second morning, so it's no use. You may as well give up. The Bible says, seek peace and pursue it. Now, it doesn't mean you can make it happen, but you should never give up trying to make it happen or doing your part as much as you can to pursue peace. It's part of healing relationships. And too often we give up too quickly and too easily. We're better at hunting bucks than we are at healing relationships. And I think we can do better. What about relationship strains with your wife? We think differently in many ways. 1 Peter 3:7 says, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as a weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. So, we're all God's children, right? So that means your wife is God's daughter. How many of you men have married daughters? Okay? How do you feel, how would you feel if your daughter's husband is not nice to her? Does that put some edge between you and your son-in-law? Probably. How does God, your wife's father, feel when you're not nice to your wife? You think maybe it hinders your prayers, like it says in this verse I just read? God is your father-in-law in that sense. Think about that. and treat your wife accordingly and take care of any relationship strains between you and your wife. I lost my first wife to cancer just over 10 years ago. We didn't know, she was not in very good shape. We didn't know how it would go. But one night, we were dealing with something, and I got frustrated with a request she was giving me kind of repeatedly. And I spoke sharply to her, and I saw it hurt her, and I immediately asked for forgiveness, and we talked it through, and we made it right. 3 hours later, she died. How do you think I would have struggled had I not immediately worked through that and made that right? Your wife is a gift from God, and you have no time guarantee with that gift. Cherish her and treat her well while you have her. So, I briefly mentioned sexual sins in my other topic. When Jesus told us that looking on a woman to lust after her is committing adultery, you know, he was giving those men back in that day a new idea. Back then, as long as you didn't end up in bed with the woman, you weren't committing adultery. But that's not what he wanted. He wants a pure heart. And he was showing us that when we sin, when something's wrong in our hearts, we worship our flesh rather than Jesus. We worship the body of a woman rather than Jesus. You can't love God when you're lusting after a woman. And don't think that just because it's a digital woman that it's not real. No, it's real. It's someone. And you're lusting after someone, and you're not loving God when you're lusting after someone. And just because you don't touch a woman doesn't mean you're not committing adultery or fornication. When you're looking at a woman with wrong desires, it's sin. And it's addicting, a little bit like I talked about that dopamine hit. And so get help to learn how to walk victoriously in the area of sexual sins. Even if it's something private like masturbation, you can learn to walk victoriously in that as a young man. I struggled with that intensely as a young man. And God has made a way for you to be victorious in that. And we need to be convinced of that and learn to walk in that. I'm not saying it's easy because the demands of the flesh are real and it's something to learn how to cope with. The idea of growth, we're talking about hindrance to growth, but the idea of growth flies in the face of complacency. One of the reasons you're here is because you want more, I believe. You could have done all kinds of other things today, and that's why this house isn't full. But do you want more spiritually, badly enough to never give up growing, never give up learning, and always getting closer to God as the Father? Sometimes you just may want to hit cruise control and relax a little, like Gary wants to sit in the chair instead of going to garden. Sometimes, but cruise control is a sure way to go backwards. Are you willing to periodically evaluate your life and see if you're like Jesus more of the time than you used to be? So God wants, yes, even expects us to grow. He wants us to be on fire for Him. We need to be genuine but gentle with our zeal. And we should be an inspiration to others to grow. We should make the gospel of Jesus Christ more attractive to anyone observing our lives. So may God bless you as you choose to discipline yourselves, get rid of any hindrance to growth, and grow into the image of Him that created you.